a lick, a smidgen, a jiffy. This is Lista Daly Schwartz with Mathematical Methods for Pedagogical Engineering. What are these things? Where did they come from? Do we need to know them? Do we need to use them to find out? What do we need to do? I think we need to have a bigger discussion about this. In ancient times, our bodies ruled when it came to measuring. The length of a foot, the width of a finger, and the distance of a step were all acceptable measurements. Length is the most necessary measurement in everyday life. The units of length in many countries still reflect humanity's first elements of methods. An inch was a thumb. A foot speaks for itself. And a yard relates to closely a human pace, that is, one step, but also delivers from 2 cubits, the measure of the forearm. The mile is the origin of the Roman milus papus, 1,000 paces, approximately to a mile, because a Romans defined a pace as 2 steps, bringing the walker back to the same foot. With measurements such as these, it's easy to explain how far away the next village is, or how long it is to get to work, or any other thing from an object of how will it fit through a doorway. Some other interesting things that we use is a hand. A hand is approximately 5 inches or 5 digits, your fingers across. Today, a hand is defined as 4 inches and is used to measure horses. A span was the length of the hand stretched out, which is about 9 inches. A foot was about 11 and 1/42 of an inch. Today, it's 12 inches. A yard was originally the length of a man's belt or a girdle. It was also called, in the 12th century, King Henry I fixed a yard so that it was the distance from his nose to his thumb on an outstretched arm, totaling 36 inches, and it has stuck. A cubit is an ancient Egyptian used this cubit for the distance between the elbow and the fingertip. Today, a cubit is about 18 inches. A lick is used by the Greeks to measure the distance from the tip of the thumb to the tip of the index finger. That's a lick. For complex measuring problems of civilization, surveying land and registering property rights or selling of commodities by length, more precise units were required. The solution was a rod. So what they did was they took and they made an exact length and they made a rod, and then they kept it in the middle of the village or in a temple because it was so important. A meter. How did we get a meter? The French originated the meter in 1790 as 1/10,000,000th of the distance from the equator to the North Pole along a meridian through Paris. It is a realistic representation by distance between 2 marks on an iron bar that is kept in Paris. The International Bureau of Weights and Measures, created in 1875, upgraded the bar to one made of 90% platinum and 10% iridium alloy. In 1960, the meter was redefined as 1,750,663.73 wavelength of the orange-red light in a vacuum, produced by a burning element of krypton. More exact, recently in 1984, the Geneva Convention of Weights and Measures defined a meter as the distance light travels in a vacuum, and boy, it's super small. That traveling was super fast. So the foot, going back to that English foot, has been so constant. And did you know that the U.S. Congress legalized the use of the metric system in 1866 on a basis that 1 meter is exactly equal to 39.37 inches, 39 37 hundredths of an inch. Wow, lots of legal stuff happening here. Let's talk about volume. Among the requirements of traders or tax collectors, a reliable standard of volume is the hardest to achieve. Nature provides some very rough averages, such as goat skins, baskets, sacks, pottery jars that can be made to approximate a consistent size, sufficient perhaps for many everyday transactions. But where the exact amount of a commodity needed to be known, weight is a measure more likely to be relied upon than volume. Time. Time is central to the modern life. It has always been. We've always used it. The day, the week, and the week are easily recognized and recorded through accurate calendars for a year. The forenoon, did you know it was forenoon? We always talk about afternoon, but the forenoon was easily to distinguish from the afternoon, provided the sun was shining, because they used the sun and the landscapes that could reveal roughly how much of the day had passed. By contrast, smaller parcels of time, that hour, minute, and seconds, have until recent centuries been both unmeasurable and unneeded. So this whole thing with time, it all started with a sundial and a water clock. So that was the beginning, about 2 million BC. And then it evolved to many other things, including an hourglass. And in the 14th century, we had the arrival of the clock. In 14th century AD, our hour is a variable concept. It is a practical division of the day into 12 segments. 12 was chosen because it is divisible by 2, by 3, and by 4. For the same reason, 60 is divisible by 2, 3, 4, and 5. This was a larger framework of measurement, all the way back to the Babylonian times. The traditional concept of the hour, as written in time between dawn to dusk, is in useful terms of everyday timekeeping. Approximate appointments are easily made at which time it is sensed. Noon is always the sixth hour. Halfway through the afternoon is the ninth hour. The trouble with the traditional hour is that it differs in the length from day to day. As a daytime hour is different from one in the night, also divided into 12 equal hours, the clock cannot reflect this variation, but it can offer something more useful. It can provide every day something which occurs naturally only twice a year. At spring and at autumn, the equinox, which is the 12 hours of a day and 12 hours of night on the same day. In the 14th century, coincides with the first practical clocks, is the meaningful of it an hourly gradually changing. It becomes a specific amount of time. One 24 hour of a full solar cycle from dawn to dawn, and the day is now thought of as 24 hours, although our clocks never change to have 24 hours. They have 12. Now, minutes and seconds, they are what we use when we want to get very precise. And with the arrival of the dials on the faces of the clocks in the 14th century, something like a minute is required. The Middle Ages, by a torturous route from the Babylonians, inherit the scale of scientific measurement based on 60. The medieval Latin, the unit of the 60th, is potus matius prima, first very small part. And the 60th of that is pars minute secunda, second very small part. Thus, a principle 3,000 years old, minutes and seconds find their way into today's time. Let's talk about Jiffy. Don't say back in a jiff unless you literally mean it to a friend, because what scientist Gilbert Newton Lewis defined a jiffy as an amount of time it takes light to travel 1 centimeter. That's 33.3536 picoseconds. And a picosecond is a trillionth of a second, by the way. So you better be very, very fast if you're going to be back in a jiffy. A smidgen is a very small quantity of material. Until recently, no one thought of a smidgen was an actual unit of measure. But recently, you can find these in kitchen supply stores and even in your local store on the corner. U.S. and other countries have begun selling what they call mini spoons, in which the smallest spoon is labeled a smidgen. It is designed to hold exactly half a pinch or 30 seconds of a teaspoon. The word is a diminutive of smutch or smudge. It originally meant a small spot. Now, cheesemakers around the world have been using these little mini measurement tools forever. So they have already got this down. So when you look at these, they've actually got them to where you can buy them now with a tad, which is a fourth of a teaspoon, a dash, which is an eighth of a teaspoon, a pinch, which is a 16th of a teaspoon, a smidgen, which we just talked about. That's 1/32 of a teaspoon. But one has also recently been added, and that's the drop. It is 1/64 of a teaspoon. So now when you read your old grandmother's recipes and it says she used a pinch of salt, you could buy a teaspoon and know exactly what that is. Now all of these efforts have led to international systems of units, which can be networked, and international treaties and legal definitions of measurement. Now we know what these are, where they came from, and how we can use them. A lick, a smidgen, and a jiffy. Have a wonderful day. This is Lista Daly Schwartz with Mathematical Methods for Pedagogical Engineering.